TiVo's Q4 2023 video trends report showed paid services used flattened while free services grew. Churn, discovery, and operator SDB streaming were some of our other highlights.
Welcome to this week's edition of Inside the Stream. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and that was Colin Dixon from Endscreen Media there at the beginning. Hi, Colin. How is everything on your end?
It's great. I gather our weather is a lot better than yours. You have a storm brewing, don't you?
We have a big-time nor'easter coming. We're recording on Wednesday because I was concerned getting all kinds of messages about potential power outages tomorrow, Thursday. So hopefully by the time our listeners hear this podcast on Friday, things will have blown over without any major event. But I think we're going to go ahead and get started. You have the first news item this week, and then I'm going to follow up, and then we're going to get into the TiVo data.
I do, yeah. My news item for this week, Will, is that Sinclair signed a deal with Disney ABC to increase the distribution of its crime procedural network, Charge. And this is pretty interesting because the deal actually brings Charge to ABC's owned and operated stations in 8 different markets, and they're major markets. So, like, you know, there's WABC TV in New York, KABC TV in LA, Chicago, Philadelphia, Houston, San Francisco, Raleigh, Durham, and Fresno. So they're pretty major markets. And the way this will work is that they've sort of signed up for Diginet 3. So what that means is that if you're using an over-the-air antenna, if you go to the major channel number, let's say ABC is on channel 6 in your area, then you would go to 6.3, and there you would find Charge. And Charge has some pretty interesting content on it. CSI Miami, Without a Trace, and a whole bunch of other procedurals that are also available on the channel. And so I think this is it's an interesting deal because it gives them reach. Basically, it adds 4 million additional homes that can be reached with an over-the-air antenna. And because of existing deals, carriage deals with pay TV operators, is an additional 3.75 million. But for Charge, I really think Charge is a channel that really hasn't found its way as a brand onto fast services. And with, you know, like 70 million homes, we'll get to this in a minute because we're going to review some data that will tell us more precisely. But, you know, I don't know, something like 70 million homes are using fast services these days, and it is simply the quickest way to get big coverage. Scripps is using it big time. So, for example, Scripps says it can reach about 95% of homes in the US today with a combination of OTA, over-the-air delivery, and with using Diginets and with FAST for its digital native property Newsy. So it's in, you know, pretty much the majority, or can reach the majority of US homes. Unfortunately, with OTA, with over the air, you can really only reach about 18 million US homes. Even if Scripps had full distribution of Charge in every network, in every all of the 210 DMAs in the US, the most it can reach is 18 million, because that's how many people, Nielsen says, are using an antenna today in their homes. So they really need a fast strategy. Interestingly, if you go to Charge's website, they say you can get Charge through STIRR. And STIRR, that's S-T-I-R-R, was actually started by Sinclair and has recently been sold to Horizon Media. And it says if you go to Charge's website that you can be found on STIRR, but I looked yesterday and I sure as heck couldn't find it anywhere. In fact, I couldn't find any Sinclair properties on STIRR at all. So maybe it will rectify that, but STIRR isn't a very popular service, so I think they need a fast strategy to really pump up Charge's reach.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're on their way to doing that with this deal. So, as you said, it sounds like a pretty comprehensive approach that they're taking.
Well, yeah, it is in OTA world, but as I say, they really don't seem to have a strategy for fasts yet for charge, and they need to have one.
Right. Yeah. I meant to say OTA, comprehensive on the OTA side. Hopefully more to come.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did you see? What caught your eye this week?
Yeah, what caught my eye this week was the news that NBA and Roku were partnering for the NBA's first fast channel. And sounds like it'll run on Roku for a while exclusively, and then probably open up to other platforms as well. But this new NBA fast channel is part of what's called the NBA Zone, which is an area within Roku, actually an area that I spend a decent amount of time in, kind of going back and forth between games. Although Celtics have my main focus, it's fun to watch some of the other teams play one another as well. Let's see about the other players, how they're doing. So this new fast channel will be part of NBA Zone, and it sounds like the channel is going to be mostly shoulder type content and include some games, highlights, documentaries, series, and some other programming. And according to Greg Beaton, who is the NBA's SVP of content partnerships, he said that the partnership supports their goal of reaching NBA fans with our content in innovative ways. And it seems like really kind of having this be, as he said, an on-ramp to live NBA games. And certainly it's launching ahead of the playoffs, which are going to be pretty exciting this year. A lot of great teams playing. And just seems like another effort to help expand the amount of sports content that's out there beyond the games themselves. We've talked in the past about what Netflix has done with various sports and rights holders. They've done this with F1, PGA, they did it with tennis, with Breakpoint. So an extension of that effort, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so, Will. And look, I think this makes a heck of a lot of sense to do this. And I think you're absolutely right. It won't stay exclusive with Roku for very long. Perhaps it makes a lot of sense to do that and for the Roku to sort of help them with the launch and get it all together, but they need to get this on all the major fasts so that it's easily found by viewers everywhere. It just makes so much sense, right? Not only does it provide additional incremental revenue through the ads that are run on that content, but it will, I'm absolutely certain that it will have a positive effect on viewership of the live games. And I hope that they use this channel to sort of pump up interest. So they did say that they were going to have some original content on here. Why not have a game review, you know, a sort of preview show each week that sort of pumps up interest in the big games going on that week? And also they could help users find those games, because we know how difficult it is to find them. They could tell them how they can actually view them, both on streaming and on traditional pay TV or even their local broadcasters. So this just makes a heck of a lot of sense. And there's just so many synergies between it and where the live games are broadcast and, you know, NBA in general. So I think it's a really good deal for them, and I expect to see a lot of the major leagues do that.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think all these leagues are going to be launching fast channels and doing what you just said they'll use them for, which is to really help pump up interest in their sports and highlight key players and stats and really just draw more people in on an easy, free way. So
yeah, I think we'll also see major teams do this as well.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things that continues to be very popular is local content. You know, local teams should launch these channels so that they can expand their relationship with their local viewers. So I just think it makes a lot of sense for sports just in general.
Yep, totally agree. And we are going to turn our attention now to TiVo's latest video trends report, which you've been spending some time on, and you're going to get us started. We're going to dig into it.
Yeah, so I often cite TiVo's data from its video trends report. And look, if you aren't picking this report up on a regular basis, you really should be. There really is no other data like it in our industry. TiVo has been doing this for a long time. So they can really give you not only a picture of where you are today, where we are today with the business, but they give a really good picture of the trajectory because they have so much of this really consistent survey data set, which includes 4,500 people from Canada and the US. So it really gives you an idea of the trajectory. And here's a great example. So they're talking about the average total services that people are watching. So this is the average total TV services that people watch video through. And in Q4 2023, that's 11.1 services, which is actually slightly down from Q4 2022, which is 11, where they were watching 11.5. But we are still way above where we were in 2021 and 2020. So we're still watching way more services than we were 2 years ago, but it does show a small decline. And TiVo helps us out by telling us that actually the decline came at the expense of paid services. And in the paid services, TiVo is including traditional pay TV services. So if you have a cable TV subscription and SVOD subscription services and virtual MVPDs. So those are all lumped in with paid services. And yep, you see a pretty big decline from 7.6 per person last year in 2022 to 7.1 in 2023, Q4 2023. And actually, non-paid services, which includes fast services, they actually inched up a little bit from 3.9 to 4.0 over the last year. And that, I should know, is way up from where it was just 3 years ago in 2020. It was 1.4, so it's like three times as many services as we were using back in Q4 of 2020. So that really marries very nicely with what we've been hearing in other survey data and other reports, that is that consumers are pulling back slightly on their spending on paid services. So this, as I say, really meshes very well. And they threw in one interesting data stat here, Will. They said 20% of respondents feel they have too many services. So there's still a good few of us who think that we need to thin out our services and focus a little on the ones that are really paying off for us. So that's the big picture that they really paint here. Anything catch your eye there, Will?
Yeah, I was just going to jump in to say that the that increase over the 3 year period from Q4 20 to Q4 23 of average non-paid services of 1.4 to 4.0 is, as you said, a pretty dramatic increase, and I do think really reflects how quickly the ad-supported part of the market has grown with the proliferation of FAST and the quality of content that's grown, and also I would say the awareness, just the pure awareness of free services as they've been pushed front and center, their apps have been pushed front and center by the various TV manufacturers and other services, has, I think, really helped this as well. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that number a year out. I wouldn't be surprised to see that non-paid services number continue to increase and have that paid services number continue to decrease.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all either, Will. I think, as you say, with price rises the way we're seeing them, I think people are going to continue to really focus their attention on the ones that are really paying off for them and drop services that aren't. I also think another thing that's that we're going to see and are seeing is an increase in churn. And actually, that data is right here in the TiVo report, the video trends report for Q4 2023. And they report that 24.3% canceled a service in the last 6 months, and 28.6 started subscribing to a new service. So the gap there is 4%, right, between those two. That's a big decline from what it was last year. And I think it was almost double that. The gap between starting a service and canceling a service was 8%, something like that, in favor of more starting than canceling. So I think that gives you a really solid indication that churn has increased a lot. You know, that there's a great example of how we are really beginning to thin our services down a little bit and focus much more on the ones that we're using a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I think that makes a lot of sense also. You know, we've talked about Peak TV, which seems to have leveled off now, but still there's so much content available out there now that it seems natural that at some point more and more people start to realize that they just aren't watching certain services or aren't watching them that frequently, and as a result, cancel them, churn out.
Yeah, I wonder, one of the things that I think is also at play here, Will, is two things. One is the strikes. I think that's really had an impact on the flow of new content into these services, and that also shows up in the data that we've seen about Peak TV. Peak TV, I think, is officially over. This is, of course, what one of the things that FX has been tracking pretty closely, the number of scripted series that have been produced each year. And there was a big decrease last year, a big decrease this year. So I think this is probably a dual effect of one is the strikes that's cut back. But two, we have also seen content providers like Disney cut back on the amount they're spending on in creating new original series. So there's just a lower content flow into the services. And that, well, that's obviously showing up here now where people suddenly discover, well, this service hasn't provided anything new that I've been interested in a while and are canceling it. I've seen other data that's showing that churn is trending up. And so what consumers are doing is when services aren't producing a lot of content that they want to watch, they're canceling them. And then when they bring in a new show that's interesting, they come in and resubscribe. They're not being shy now of getting rid of a subscription right after they've watched something else, something new that they did want to watch. They're just going to cancel and go back to the services that keep paying them real dividends by providing regular updates with new good content that they want to watch.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that feeds in also to another data point that TiVo reported, which is that the average total spend on video services in Q4 of 2023 declined to about $177, down from $189 just a year ago, and slightly up from what it was a couple of years ago in Q4 21. And there are obviously lots of different things that are feeding into that. Looks like when breaking out pay TV subscribers, they dropped from 230 a month to 216 a month, whereas broadband only subscribers increased from $62 a month to $70 a month. But I think, you know, consistent with what we were just saying previously, you know, it seems like there's a trend toward spending a little bit less, and that feeds into the churn rates on both the paid streaming services and also the pay TV services.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's a great illustration, right? So yeah, people are cutting back, and you actually see that in the amount that they're reporting that they're spending. But the interesting thing, I think we should spend a little moment, Will, and take a look at how AVOD and FAST are doing. And that's the really impressive piece that's really highlighted, I think, by this data. What TiVo says is that the number of people that say they use at least one AVOD FAST service has increased from 63.5% last year to 67.8% this year. So that's a pretty decent, 4% increase, and actually is slightly more than the increase we saw between 2021 and 2022. And get this, just 3 years ago, back in 2020, it was 51%. So big increase over 2020. And the big services there, well, Tubi, Roku Channel, Pluto TV, Freevee, and maybe Samsung TV Plus, although it looks to be quite a bit behind the big four, which is Pluto, Roku, Tubi, and Freevee. Those services are doing extremely well. And interestingly, there was an interview with Tom Ryan in Variety this week, and Tom was talking about how well Pluto is doing. He said a couple of things that I really liked. One was, he said that Pluto TV is profitable. It's profitable as a standalone service, earned over $1 billion last year, and is doing extremely well. Is being used by 80 million people every month, and is continuing to grow. And that really, I think, is a great illustration of how free ad-supported streaming TV services have just become part of the regular diet of a lot of people. More than two-thirds of people are now using them, which, by the way, is considerably more than are using traditional, or even if you add in the virtual MVPDs, traditional pay TV and virtual MVPDs, that's more than are using those services now. So now both FASTs and SVODs, there are more people in America using those two different types of services than use traditional pay television, or the big bundle of traditional channels. So that, I think that's a very interesting statistic right there.
Yeah, I agree. And this is the interview in Variety just recently, and there were a number of really, I thought, interesting quotes by Tom. And just one other one where he's asked about the synergies between Pluto and Paramount Plus. He says, Pluto is a huge funnel for brand awareness and ultimately subscription consideration for Paramount Plus, because we promote Paramount Plus not just with advertising on Pluto, but also with dedicated channels that include Paramount Plus content. So I think we've talked about this in the past, but I think both agree the synergy between free fast services and paid services, the synergies are really significant in lots of different ways. He sort of illustrates them a little bit in that quote, and I think we're both somewhat surprised that we haven't seen more activity from others, other big media companies. Certainly Tubi, Fox and Tubi have followed the strategy, but then if you look at Peacock, they've gone in the other direction. They started with a free service for Peacock and now just have paid or a hybrid paid and ad supported version of Peacock. So they seem to have really landed on a winning approach there at Paramount with the Pluto Paramount Plus synergy.
They sure have, Will. And like you, I am mystified as to why the broadcasters and programmers haven't jumped on the opportunity. So, 10 years ago when I first, it might have even been more than 10 years ago, I actually wrote a report with another analyst when I was an analyst at the Diffusion Group. I wrote a report with Bill Niemeyer, who was a great analyst there at the time. And the two of us, we sat down and we modeled out how a broadcast property, a major broadcast property like ESPN, could be profitable in the streaming world. And I got to tell you, the only way I could see that it would really work is if you blended models. And you could definitely make the same amount of money online, but you had to have a free tier of service, which would be used by a lot of people. It's free, there's no barrier to using it. And as we're seeing, FAST are really taking off now. You would have a subscription tier, which would be fed by the FAST, just exactly as the way Tom Ryan is talking. They use they use Pluto to promote Paramount Plus, and it's very successful at bringing in new subscribers. And we also said that we would expect also that you would use pay-per-view, so special movies, for example. And we are seeing that a little bit. Disney's done that, obviously, through Disney Plus, although they've sort of backed away from that as a core strategy just recently. But if you do that, if you blend models, you can end up doing extremely well. And that, I think, is what we're seeing happening with Pluto TV and Paramount Plus. The two play extremely well together and feed each other. Remember, one of the strategies that Paramount Plus has used, I think, to great advantage, is to do a dedicated channel to a new show. Like, for example, Picard. They showed the first episode of Picard when they first released that show on Paramount Plus. They showed it for free on a channel on Pluto, and that was a great feeder into subscriptions to Paramount Plus, and it seems to have worked. He says that they now have 67 million subscribers to Paramount Plus, which is, you know, okay. So it's not Netflix 260 million or Disney with Disney Plus, but it certainly is a substantial footprint, and I have no doubt that that service will move towards profitability in 2025, just as he says it will.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I know our time is a little short here. I wanted to bring us back to the TiVo report, if I could. There were two other data points that jumped out at me, and I thought it might be worth discussing them. Just very quickly, the data point, I know TiVo has mentions this every time, but that only 19% of viewers typically know what they want to watch. And almost half will go to two or three different streaming apps before they end up deciding on something that they want to watch. So discovery continues to be a significant issue out there. And, you know, surprisingly, even in this age where there's so many different shows out there that are passed around the water cooler, or the virtual water cooler, whatever you want to call it, that there still is a large percentage of people out there who are not sure what they want to watch when they sit down.
Will, this beautifully illustrates why, you know, we were talking earlier about the fact that consumers are beginning to cut back, that they're perfectly comfortable now going to a service, watching a show, and then canceling after they've watched the service that attracted them. And this is absolutely, this TiVo data shows the danger the SVOD services are in when they do not provide good discovery and they don't help people find something else when they finish watching that great show that they came to watch. They're going to cancel. And what's even worse is, like, if you don't capture them pretty quickly when they come in with something, they're gone. They're going to go to another service and you lose that view. And if you are relying on ads, which most of the services are now, I think pretty much all the major SVOD services except for Apple TV Plus have an ad tier, then that's also bad for you, right? Because you don't get the ad view either. It just perfectly illustrates, that's that, perfectly illustrates the risks that service providers are running when they don't provide great discovery and they aren't able to capture people's attention when they come in. So, you know, it's a great stat.
Agree. And then if I may just throw one last stat in here that I thought was interesting. They have a slide in the report about smart TV ownership. Q4 2023, saying that the percentage of respondents who own at least one smart TV was 76.4%. That's actually lower than what we've seen from reports from Bruce Leishman. I know he's, I think, in the high 80s in percent, high 80% for at least one smart TV. But what caught my eye on this one was the primary method of watching video on TV. The two categories that have about 80% between them are apps built into my smart TV and streaming media player. So that's about 80. And then it trails off very quickly into single digits and down at 3% is apps built into a set-top box or DVR. And the reason why that caught my attention is that the it's been an initiative by various cable telco and satellite providers to offer streaming apps via their set-top boxes and for a while now, and yet they are down there at 2.9%. They have, it feels like, gotten completely passed over by consumers in terms of how to access streaming services, just gotten completely cut out of the equation, their equipment, their role, etc. And it's no surprise that many of them are now becoming broadband only providers and dropping pay TV service or de-emphasizing and going with a partner like YouTube TV.
Yeah, and you're dead right there, Will. And this actually is pretty interesting. Again, another pretty interesting stat. One of the things that we've heard, and I've heard repeated time and time again, is that operators should be providing integration of SVOD services because consumers are, they're confused, they're having trouble finding stuff, that this is a value add that they can provide to consumers. And we know that major operators like Comcast and Charter are doing exactly that. But here's the thing. Pay TV services are extremely expensive. And what I think this illustrates is that the integration, the ease of integration isn't able to overcome the expense of pay TV when a consumer starts to disconnect from watching traditional television and spend their time watching streaming services. When they do that, they're not willing to stay subscribed to a pay television service that costs them over $100 a month. They know that they can save a bunch of money by canceling and managing it themselves. And as we see in TiVo's data, they may not like it, but they're willing to go in and out of several apps to find something to watch to save that amount of money. So that really does give a pretty interesting comment on the idea that people are willing to pay a premium for a nice integrated experience. Apparently not.
Right. Fair enough. We should note that the Video Trends Report is available as a free download from the TiVo site, correct?
That's exactly right, Will, and we'll include a link with that in our postings.
Excellent. Well, good talking this through, Colin. I hope our listeners enjoyed this, a lot of really rich data in the report, and sheds, I think, valuable light on what the state of the market is these days.
I think it does.
Okay, well, that's it for this week. Thanks, Colin. Thanks, everyone, for listening in on this week's Inside the Stream, and we will see you all again next week.
Inside the Stream is a production of InScreen Media and Video News, all rights reserved.